Welcome to Conversations for a Brave New World with Donna, Sonia and Cliff, where we bring you a global, national and local focus on gender, sexuality and feminism.
Hi, I'm Donna Bridges, Senior Lecturer at Charles Sturt University, and I'm here today with students from Lakehead University in Canada, who are on their diversity and inclusion trip to Charles Sturt University. Also with us today is their professor, Rosemary Dupuy. The students that we have with us today are AJ, James, Helly, Kristen, Jacob, Kyoko, Carolyn, Lincoln, and of course, we have Rosemary, the professor.
On behalf of everyone, thank you so much for having us here today.
The first question I wanted to ask you all today is about gender equity in Canada. So Canada's got a fantastic reputation for gender equity. Do you think Canada is deserving of this reputation?
I think to some extent, yes, but also definitely we have a lot of issues. I think in comparison to other places in the world, we are pretty progressive, but there are a variety of things that we need to work on and things that we face on a daily basis in terms of gender equity.
I also agree. And I think a lot of our issues are hidden in the fact that we have this reputation where we're kind Canadians, we're so progressive, we're moving forward in this world. But then our issues with the stigma with Indigenous peoples and people of color and immigrants get pushed aside and put under the rug. And I think that's something we need to focus on more. But it's from the outside perspective, it doesn't seem like we have those issues that we really do have.
Carolyn, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I don't know how well known it is outside of Canada, but we do have a really big issue with the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit individual crisis, where there's many that we know of and many more that we don't. So I don't know if that's focused on a lot, but it's a really big issue that probably not a lot of people are aware of.
Possibly not. I have heard about it in the news and read a little bit about it and shared it in one of my classes. But is there anyone here who'd like to add to that, provide some more information for the listeners?
It's always difficult for marginalized communities to get the support and visibility for these kinds of issues. So what often happens is they're preyed upon because our police systems and our women's shelters are often not built to support Indigenous women. They feel like they don't have access to resources, so they become easier targets. So that's why it's a feedback loop that keeps getting worse.
I agree that I don't think Canada is 100% deserving of this, but it is important to note that there are steps that are being taken, such as in some of the school boards, there is now mandatory credits you have to take for like Indigenous studies in high school, as well as we have the gender and women's studies at the university. So I think it is good that we have these opportunities. However, it did take a really long time to get here.
Well, thank you, James and AJ. Kyoko, you want to add to that?
Yeah, just in addition to that, it's often something that you have to seek out to educate yourself about in Canada. It's not something that would be provided for you, especially in places that don't have a large Indigenous population. And so it is a lot of the time on individuals to educate themselves and share that information.
And how does the mainstream population deal with these issues?
It really depends on what province you live in. Like in Ontario, we seem to be pretty liberal. So a lot of the times, usually those topics are okay to talk about. It's more talked about and reflected in the curriculums. And then in other places, such as Quebec, there are a lot more race biases. There's a lot more discrimination. It really depends on where you are, where you're living, what your environment is like, who you're living around. Because Canada is such a big country and we have such a diverse population, there's a lot of different. Mm. So it can be very varied.
As a First Nations person, James, how do you experience it?
Well, I want to make it clear that I do not speak for Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. The only people mm-hmm. I can speak for are my family and the issues that we've gone through. But I believe one of the clearest examples of the mainstream media not representing the issues or not the shock that appears on mainstream media was the residential schools, which was a cultural assimilation project where it was a cultural genocide mm-hmm. rather than a traditional genocide. Recently, there was more than 10,000 Indigenous children mm-hmm. found in unmarked graves around our residential schools, which was harrowing and tragic for the communities who had for decades and sometimes centuries not known what happened to their children. When this became public knowledge and they were doing investigations with sonar technology to discover these grave sites, not one person in my family was surprised, because for us, this was just part of our history. We had known this our entire lives. My grandparents were in residential schools. It was not a surprise. But mainstream media, once they started going around, I would run into people who were learning about it for the first time. And I could not imagine how that can be possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not spoken about. You cover two sections in two different grades. They are small chapters in a book about Indigenous issues. And it hasn't been updated since, I believe, the 90s. And for reference, the last residential school was closed in 1998.
And that being said, I didn't learn about any Indigenous cultures or histories until I got to university, because in high school I was in French immersion. So it was just completely bypassed for my secondary or my high school education. So that's another thing too, that it's just not talked about enough at all.
I think we can conclude this section by saying that the gender issues for women in Canada are largely most significant in the Indigenous population.
Just to add quickly, like, as being a person of color, a visual minority, that, not to take away from the Indigenous women at all, but this is what I see a lot, is that we also get quite dismissed, and there are so many stereotypes with the immigrants coming to Canada, and that I see, like, my family members being treated extremely poorly. Like, I've been asked before, like, where'd you come from? Because they didn't think I was Canadian. I'm like, well, I was actually born and raised here, but I don't have the same, like, skin color as I am, not white. But yeah, there's a lot going on with that too. And it just makes me, like, fearful for my younger sister that's growing up with, like, has colored skin too. And just, that's hard, but hopefully change is coming sooner than later.
Thanks, Hallie. Did you want to add to that, Rosemary? You're a migrant into Canada.
Yes, I do. So Canada does, when you asked what's Canada's perspective on Indigenous history. And what Canada has done is not only ignored it, but what Canada has done is branded itself as an immigrant country. So in that way, we can actually sidestep the issue that it is a colony and it is a settler colony, mm-hmm. and that's the reality even to today. But at the same time, it's a double negative, because even though it situates itself as an immigrant country, the immigrant comes with the idea of race. And actually, mm-hmm. Canada is still one of the countries that race is defined by color. So when you fill the census, it's white, black, it's not by ethnicity.
Thank you all for contributing to that section. Let's move on to gender identity. Let's talk about gender identity in Canada.
So I already have a degree as an early childhood educator in Canada, and we actually just had training this past year on a program called T-Tree. Not only does it touch base on sexual harassment for kids as young as before they even enter school systems, so we're talking about daycares, but we do it through a way of like puppetry and storytelling and storybooks. And that also, it also has a little bit of a gender identity section to it as well, and about teaching children that it's okay to include everybody. What I think is important about gender identity for people in Canada, I'm a different generation than the students here. So for me, it was not really spoken about. It was like kind of always hush-hushed. where I think as a person that I've watched Canada grow a little bit, where the people are more accepting towards it. There is still like a lot of negativity, and especially towards like people of color. So especially if I were to touch base on like the trans community, there is a lot of people of color, transgender hate, and a lot of violence that is really swept under the rug. As a parent to a child who is exploring the possibility of becoming transgender and a person of color, it worries me greatly because I want to support him and I want to make sure that he has that outlet. But the problem is that I worry about his safety.
Yeah, no, that's understandable.
Like going back, like on the education system and everything, my mom's a teacher, so like I kind of get to like learn some things from her, but I feel like it's getting better because she's like telling me that like there's workshop that she's going to like about these topics and everything. But like I reflect back, like me going to school, there was never really too much like exposure, I feel like. And I went to a Catholic school, so that might have also been part of it too. I don't know if I can actually say this, but anyways, I think a huge thing too is like with like sex education. Like I think unfortunately like there's not exposure to people who are part of like the community and everything, and that's like very unfortunate. And a lot of kids I feel like won't discover who they are because they don't have that exposure and everything. And like a lot of, I just remember growing up, like some kids were, their parents didn't want them to even be in class for that part. And so how are you going to ever like have that exposure? And
Kaya, you wanted to add to that?
I think that even between my sister and I, there's a three year age gap, and there's a large difference in our high school experiences with gender identity. When I was in high school, there were very few people who express gender identity outside the binary. And with my sister's educational experience, she has found and explains to me like the great number of students who are able to express gender identity and explore that in their high school. So I think that there is some progress with that, but at the same time, it's only so far at the moment. And for the educational portion, I aspire to be a kindergarten teacher. And I think just doing simple things like separating children by gender is just a good way to start to navigate how to just eliminate those restrictive labels.
It is so hard, right? Because we are taught from a really young age how to identify ourselves and identify everybody else. And it, once you stop being identified as a baby, people say, well, you are a boy or a girl. You're not a baby anymore. You're a big boy or you're a big girl. So it just starts so young. It's hard for us all to adapt, isn't it? We have a budding queer theorist with us today. Jacob, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I had a similar experience to Lincoln. My mom is also a teacher. They actually work together. And she also talks about how the Catholic school board that I attended and that she works in was changing and is starting to branch out. But the issue is that my personal experience being a queer person, being a gender fluid person, a very new gender fluid person, is that I don't see those changes as much as she does. Because while she's seeing the background administrative part of that, I am seeing the actual, the teachers and how they react to my identity and my peers' identities, and not getting what was promised and not getting what those changes are. That's not being reflected yet. And I think that's really difficult as a teenager to see that, yes, these changes are happening, but they're happening too slow that we're not getting any of the benefits of that yet.
Good points. Thanks, Jacob. Let's move on then. Let's look at sexual orientation in Canada and what that means to you. Canada's had same-sex marriage for a really long time, whereas in Australia it's been a very short time. It's been a very contentious debate.
for you as young people, what is the response to somebody who identifies as gay or lesbian or same-sex attracted, is married?
I think because it was legalized, gay marriage was legalized in, what was it, 2005, right,
yeah.
In Canada? And I was born in 2004. So I have grown up with it being legalized. But I think because of that, it's never been jarring for me. I have never, like, even when I was really younger, if I was introduced to somebody who was queer in any kind of way, I never saw it as a big deal. I've never really found it jarring for us. I see things, like, in the States even still. A lot of people still are, like it's a big focus around who people are. But I grew up with it being just like, oh, it's just who they are. It's just another aspect of them.
And I think that might be more true for young people. I've had young people in my classes saying they'd just be embarrassed to be homophobic, whereas for older people, it can be more of a norm. You were talking about norms.
I grew up in a very open-minded, progressive household where it was introduced to us as love is love is love is love is love is love. And so with that perspective growing up, meeting other people who didn't have the parental guidance to understand those types of relationships was like shocking to me because I couldn't comprehend that someone could be like that hateful about something that is so normal and natural. And very much depends on your relationships with your family, your peers, and educators and what their perspectives are, because I think that reflects a lot on young people.
Thanks. And Kristen, you wanted to add?
Just again, being someone of older age, when I was younger, it was a lot more difficult because it was almost shameful to identify as something other than straight, where I feel that the generations now are being brought up in a way that for my generation, we're teaching it's okay to include these people. Like, there's nothing wrong with them just because they're, do you know what I mean? For a long time, I thought there was something wrong with me, especially in high school. I felt very like secluded and isolated. And even when I did talk about it with people who were gay or bisexual, I still didn't even fit in with them. I identify as biromantic. So I'm more bisexual on the romantic side, and I'm not interested in the sexual aspects of a relationship. And even back when I was in high school, people were like, well, then you're nothing. Like, you can't identify as bisexual. You're not a bisexual. And then people that were straight were like, oh, you can't identify as us. You're not straight. So it was very, I felt lost for a really long time. We went to Keytopia and I cried because my flag was on the wall, and, you know, it just felt good to be represented.
Yeah. It's so important to be represented.
I just want to talk about like the generations and like what they think on sexual orientation. And I'm not a confrontational person at all, but the times where I want to be has always been with someone older. They weren't supplied with the proper education like that we have been given, and they didn't have the opportunities to explore these alternative avenues and routes and just big people. Like, their world is so binary, and like we've been raised that that's not the case. Maybe it was back then, but not anymore. It's hard too to talk to these older people about it because it's so, they're so stuck in their ways, and it's almost like they don't want to be told they're wrong because they've lived this way their whole life. And trying to change that is really, really difficult. And we have to take those baby steps. I think that's all you can do until they seek out the education themselves.
Thanks, Hallie. Hey, Jay.
Just going off of Hallie, I feel like it's always that older generation that is like, you need to be the change. Like, it's your generation that needs to be changed. But then more often than not, it's them who's not accepting the change that our generation is making.
So my final questions today, everybody, is about making schools and workplaces more gender inclusive, your university. Lincoln, what do you think?
I think like something as simple as pronouns is just such a big thing. And you can just be like, my name's Lincoln and my pronouns are she, her. And if you're comfortable, share yours as well. Like, that's such just, like, a big change. And I see that in my workplace, and I work with kids, and, like, we're very open about that. And it's, like, makes it a more inclusive environment for them as well.
Older people often don't understand it either. What is important about pronouns?
The important thing about pronouns is just it's someone choosing how they present themselves. And oftentimes, like, there's an issue when older people don't think that the pronoun that they're being told matches up with the person that they're seeing. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it, because sometimes, like for me, I'm a very male presenting person, but not all the time do I feel like a male. Sometimes I don't feel like a gender. Sometimes I feel like a woman, and I don't have any desire to change my appearance, but I would appreciate if an older person just said whichever pronoun I felt comfortable with. It's just about being seen as how you're feeling on the inside and being referred to as how you feel on the inside.
Thanks, Jacob. Carolyn, you wanted to say something?
I just think that in schools, like, especially, I also went to the Catholic school where, like, Lincoln did, but we almost never talked about gender identity or sexual orientation or anything. It was just kind of like, there'd be like posters up on the walls that would be like, oh, we're like a safe space or whatever, but it was never actually mm-hmm. addressed or acknowledged. It was like, well, you have to kind of figure it out for yourself and we're not helping. And it was just really like, I feel like if there's more actual acknowledgement of it, then people would be more open to learning about it rather than just being like, oh, well, I guess these people kind of exist, but I don't have to think about them or acknowledge them.
Just to go off of that, so my son is Catholic, and he is in a Catholic school, and I can see the changes, so does my husband, because I never went to Catholic school, but he did. And so this year they celebrated Pride, they had the flags out, they had the safe space kind of stuff, but they also, so like my son went to his teacher and said, like, I would prefer that my pronouns are they, them for right now. So she had contacted me and she said, like, this is how I'm going to support him in the class. And it was really nice that this is a Catholic person who is going to now support my son in a Catholic school in his classroom. So I think that they are trying to, I definitely think that, like, this avoidance, they know they can't do this avoidance any longer. Like, it's not going to be tolerated.
So this has been a fantastic opportunity to talk to Canadian young people about sex, gender, and sexuality. I've enjoyed it immensely. I'd like to thank you for being on Conversations for a Brave New World. And
thank you for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
I'm now joined by my colleagues Cliff and Sonia. Cliff and Sonia, I was intrigued by some of the themes brought up by the students from Lakehead University in Canada. One of the themes that I thought was quite similar to gender equity issues in Australia had to do with First Nations women and what the students were saying in regard to that.
I actually thought that there was a lot of similarities between some of the First Nations problems that they've got in Canada and Australia, the ones that they're talking about. I think we have them in Australia to a certain extent, slightly different, but in some ways we've probably actually got them worse. One of the things that concerned me for the Canadian students was when they were talking about their knowledge and awareness, for some of them, it wasn't until they got to college before they actually were told about the history and the problems with colonisation and assimilation. And the comment about cultural genocide, I thought, was really poignant, because it wasn't like they were killing the people, but they were killing the culture, which I think we've done to Indigenous Australians as well.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the best way to kill a people's spirit in a way, isn't it? Like, to get rid of their culture and everything that makes them tick. There's a lot of research done about how being able to speak and experience your culture actually contributes to better mental health and well-being. And you'll often find even people who do not know or are not that embedded within their culture actually experience better well-being outcomes when they can experience their culture and an environment where that culture is valued and celebrated. So you can understand this sense of being disjointed, which is similar to Australia, where this is your land, your country, but you do not belong here.
First Nations people becoming alienated in their own land. Mm-hmm. Mm. Another theme was about education, as you mentioned, Sonia. So it's liberating for the students to encounter cultural awareness when they go to university, but they didn't feel that they got it when they were young. But they talked a lot about the education system changing in Canada, and even those Catholic schools changing quite considerably, especially in terms of understanding gender identity and sexual orientation.
Yeah, and dare I say it, but as a critical spectator, I thought they were actually very positive. And I wonder if we got a group of young Australians together and asked them the same questions, what their reactions would be and whether they would be so positive.
See, I think we've got to also keep in mind the history and narrative that happens within a country's development and growth as a nation. And we in Australia are in a very different space. Our land, the motives of Australia are still about the masculinities of farming and agriculture and mining. Whereas Canada has got a different kind of experience, which lends itself differently in a way too, because in terms of LGBT, there's a lot of race-related issues there in terms of people of colour not feeling like they belong in local LGBT movements. Now, that again is similar to Australia to a level. And I remember this experience where there was a sit-in at one of these events, which the newspaper then projected as a form of terrorism, constructing this idea about people of colour seeking their rights as being akin to a terrorist act. So in terms of how society and cultures generate these representations, I think that the context of the two countries and what informs them is also very different, although we come from the same Commonwealth tradition. I think in many ways, as a spectator from the outside, I would say that they are a lot more advanced than we are as a nation because of waves of migration that have happened so far.
So there are some similarities there around colonisation that we're both ex-colonies. But one of the big differences I found was when I asked the students about marriage equality and their experience of that, they kind of had nothing to say. I had to push them on it a bit, and then we realised that some of them had been born around the time that Canada got marriage equality. Whereas for young people in Australia today, the marriage equality debates were, well, they were divisive in the community. If you were young and gay, it was very hard on young people. And they had no experience of that. They've been born into a country with that level of acceptance.
But that gives us hope, doesn't it? That this future generation will not have the same baggage that our generation carries about stigma, about our orientations, and hopefully not even about gender or ethnicity or anything like that.
They were certainly a group of informed, open and aware young people. Well, thank you, Cliff and Sonia. Next month, we're going to be joining in on the UN Women's 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, and we'll have a show for you about that.
Thanks, Donna.
Thanks, Donna. Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by the Gender Network. To get involved or find out more, simply Google the Gender Network at Charles Sturt.